Hi, I'm Rebecca, and this is my podcast, The Second Half. This podcast is about the challenges and joys we experience, especially in the second half of our lives. I'm hoping that the stories that my guests and I share will help you feel less alone as you face your own challenges, and will make us all feel more connected as a community. Today on the show, I'm talking to Dr. Cecily Havard. Dr. Havard is a family doctor with special interests in women's health and mental health. She's been practicing for over 15 years. She also teaches medical students at Georgetown University. On today's show, she talks about mental health issues affecting women and the tools to help treat mental health. I also share the story of my own struggles with anxiety and the tools that have helped me. Here we go. Hi.
Hello.
Cecily, I'm so happy that you could come by and we could talk. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a while. So I met you a couple of years ago. You were my general practitioner, and I came to you with a difficult situation for myself, something that I was surprised about, I was embarrassed about. I had had anxiety for some time, and I started having heart palpitations, and I came to see you. You were really great and helpful. One thing that I never thought I would agree to was taking medication. I had been in therapy for a couple months, 6-7 months, and it was going moderately well, but my heart palpitations were something that just shook me to my core. I didn't understand why I would have that. And I think you said something that made sense to me. I don't know if you remember what it was.
If you tell me, I'll probably remember what it
was. Well, you know, it made sense. You said sometimes when you have anxiety for a prolonged period of time, your body reacts to that.
Absolutely.
And just says, something is wrong. You need to change something.
Yeah. I find that sometimes when our mind is trying to tell us that something's wrong, we try to ignore that. You say, well, that little voice in my head isn't right. And it keeps trying to get our attention in lots of different ways. And then after a while, I find that physically, the mind recruits the physical symptoms, and we tend to listen to that sometimes a little bit more. And maybe that's the point that that you had gotten to.
It definitely
was. And that was what brought you into the doctor. Because sometimes we say, well, I can handle this. I'm stressed out. I have anxiety, but this is something I can handle. But then when we start to have physical symptoms, start to get a little more nervous, want to make sure there's nothing else going on.
Yeah.
So I frequently meet patients in the setting.
Yeah. And what you had said to me at the time was that a lot of women are struggling in midlife with some of these same things. And that made me feel better. Also, I think a lot of times for me, especially, I didn't want to talk about it to anyone. And I felt very alone. And knowing that other people are going through that kind of thing was really helpful. What do you see generally in your practice with women in their midlife?
Are you specifically in terms of mental health? Mental health. Okay. So, yeah, it's after years of practicing, I have seen, encountered a lot of patients, a lot of women who in their 40s and maybe early 50s are struggling. And I find this is very, very common. And the reason why this happens, I have to think about, well, what could be bringing this about? And I think a lot of it has to do with balance in our lives and, feeling vulnerable in what's going on in our life. Sometimes just being heard and sometimes just trying to redefine ourselves. The other thing that I find happens is as we go through different decades or, stages of our life is we have to redefine ourselves. And I find that there are certain stages that sometimes are harder to redefine than others. And there's a lot more at stake. A lot of women are in relationships. They have children that they're taking care of. Sometimes there's extended family that they're also trying to take care of. And there's a lot at stake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I found it to be a transitional time where my kids were growing up and didn't need me as much. I had been home for 9 years, 10 years. And all of a sudden, I felt that the professional I had been before, and I'd lost that identity through the time I'd stayed home, even though I was working from home part-time, very part-time. I just, there was something all of a sudden, I felt lost.
Yeah, you had lost, part of your identity had changed.
Yeah.
Right?
And I was trying to figure out how to get it back. I want to talk a little bit about this combination of therapy and medication.
Well, everybody's path to wellness, especially mental health wellness, is different. And there are different modalities that we feel comfortable doing at different times. Not everybody feels that medication is the right choice for them right away. Some people do say, I just need a pill, make me feel better. So everybody, you know, part of it is sort of knowing what, where the patient, where the person is, you know, in their life, what's important for them at that time. But what I find has been really helpful, especially in your case, when you had said, well, I've been doing therapy, it's helpful, but, you know, I still feel like I'm struggling. There's still something right. that's not right. I can't get to that place. And I find that medication sometimes can help with that. And in particular, there are medications that can reconnect us with the reasoning part of our brain. A lot of times with anxiety, with feeling scared, with feeling stressed out, what happens is we regress into our primitive brain, called it the limbic system or the amygdala. But basically what it is, it's where we experience fight or flight. And we all know what it feels like when we're in that place. And we're in an action place, but we're not really in a thinking place, right? We're trying to stay alive. And it's really hard to make changes. It's really hard to reason. It's even hard to use those coping mechanisms that therapy is trying to teach us. So what the medication can do is it can create a bridge to accessing the reasoning part of our brain. And it makes it easier to cope. It makes it easier to reason. And I find that people's journey towards wellness tends to be a little bit smoother.
That's exactly what happened to me.
I'm glad.
It's hard to imagine for me that I got to the place that I did, because growing up, I was so driven and in a lot of ways fearless because of the way I grew up. I'm an immigrant. I came country to country. I survived whatever situation I was put in. And I didn't need anyone else because I had to do it on my own. I was very privileged in that, I was able to do the things. I had family that supported me and I had financial help. But going from country to country, school to school, and always being kind of the new person and alone, I developed a skill that I was very proud of. I don't need anyone. I can do it. So, I did well in school, I did well in law school, and then I became what I considered to be successful. And I had this very tough skin in that I didn't want to show the world any kind of vulnerability. And then when that ended, in a way, when I stayed home and the kids were little, there was really no time to think about anything else. And I took care of my kids and I was busy. And as you know, when you have small kids, it's a lot of physical work.
It is. And a lot of times we do lose ourselves somewhat in that.
Right.
In taking care of them. I know I've been there.
Right.
Myself, yeah.
So you do that. And I did that for years. And then they get to an age where they really can do their own thing. And I looked around and my husband has a career that he enjoys and he's fulfilled by. And every day looking at him, and every day looking at my kids who had this purpose, they went to school, they were excited about their projects. And I just didn't have that. And I felt so sad about it. I didn't want to admit it, but I felt so sad and empty. And I remember getting up in the morning a couple years ago and thinking, I'm not happy at all. I love my kids and I'll get up and do what I need to do for them. And I love my husband, but where am I? What am I doing? And exactly what you said happened to me. I don't know where or kind of what triggered it, but I started having this daily anxiety that came with triggers. Every social trigger, I had a lot of social anxiety. I had social triggers. It could be from anyone that texts me or emails me or talks to me on the street. And those would create triggers that I'd have to respond to. And it was very primal. I felt fear, and I started responding to those triggers in an unhealthy way. And it was validate me, make sure you like me, make sure you like me, make sure you like me, every single person. And that became a cycle of anxiety that I could not get out of. And that's when I decided you need to go talk to someone. I went to a therapist and she explained what I needed to do by not responding to every single trigger so that my brain could understand that it could be fine without having
that you can survive. It's right. What we call pushing in
right
to the trigger, to the fear,
yeah,
a little bit.
To sit in the trigger, wait for it, you'll survive. And I really couldn't do it. I was doing, out of every five triggers, I could sit maybe in one. And so that was four triggers, five triggers a day that I just had to respond to, or I felt like I was going to explode, like I was going to die. It's that fear factor. It sounds insane. And I'm telling you, it's exactly what you said. My reasoned brain would say, this is silly. Of course you don't have to. Everything's fine. But I had this anxiety in my chest that I thought, you have to respond to this. You have to make sure this person validates you and likes you, or else you're going to burst.
That was the anxiety talking to you, trying to get your attention.
It's amazing. So I worked with the therapist. I tried to sit in those feelings as much as I could. But at some point, it wasn't just the anxiety. It was the heart. My body was actually responding.
Yes. I find that patients, when they come in at that point, they're on the verge of being ready to accept and move forward with their therapy. When they get to a point where their body is just telling them, help, help, I need help. And a lot of times that's when physicians get involved. I find when some of the physical symptoms start become more aware. And obviously as a physician, our first job is to make sure that the patient is healthy in the moment. There's not a direct threat to their health. So obviously the first thing I thought of when you came in and said you were having palpitations and you felt like your heart was leaping out of your chest, I said, well, let's just make sure it's nothing serious.
Yeah.
So of course that's always the first thing. But then, we have something called a differential diagnosis. That's something we're taught early in our medical training, where we put the most dangerous, frightening things up front. And those are the things we want to diagnose, or what we call rule out first. So that was what we tried to do. But then at the bottom, a little bit further down, anxiety is always something that you have to consider. And I find that especially working as I have for the last 14, 15 years in this area, I find that anxiety and mental health is a very, very common part or thread of our wellness. And it comes out in all different ways. So that's something that I always try to consider.
Definitely. And it makes sense to me now as we're talking about it, how at that stage, after I'd gone through all the tests from the cardiologist, it's like, there's nothing wrong with your heart. And there was an acceptance of, okay, I have to listen to my body and it's okay to ask for help, and taking the medication, which helped me be able to put into practice the cognitive behavior therapy tools that I'd been learning this whole time. So I'd been trying to do those. And over time, the more I practiced those, it became easier and easier.
Well, practice is definitely something that, that helps. It's not something that we can understand or, you know, we're not the master of it right away. So,
and I feel like I got back to kind of, I'm not sure this expression is even correct. My old self, I found myself again through work, through purpose, through a lot of other things. But I feel like those two things together, therapy and medication at the time, helped me make better decisions for myself. I went back to work part-time. I'm doing a lot of creative things. I have a fulfillment that I didn't have before, but to make the decisions to do those things, you have to be in a better place.
You do have to be in a better place. And yeah. And I'm glad you found that place.
Thank you. What besides on the physical side do you see as some of the most concerning or what people worry about, women worry about when they come in, you know, around mid-age?
There's a lot there's a lot that women worry about. Everybody's story, everybody's experience is different, and we all have lots of different types of stressors. Kids, I think, are probably one of the biggest ones. There's, especially as children start to enter adolescence, we start to redefine what our role is in their life, and these kids are becoming a little bit more challenging. I mean, it's normal at adolescence for kids to try to push away a little bit, and it's hard as
a
parent.
Hard.
It's part of that. I keep telling myself it's part of them growing up. It's part of them becoming independent, but they're exploring, and we're also having to redefine our lives as parents, as maybe somebody that's not as involved and not as in control.
Absolutely.
So I think that part of what I see happening is that there's a loss of control over what we thought we had control over, what we thought we knew, and that control goes away. So we see that a little bit with our kids. Relationships with our spouse, with our partner, right, also tend to get a little bit more challenging. I think, again, there's redefining of what that is. A lot of times, you know, you were parents, you brought these young children or child into this world together, and you know, it's exhausting. Your relationship changed at that point. And as they become adolescents, I think that it's like you're almost rediscovering one another a little bit. And, you know, either sometimes, you know, somebody goes further in their career, maybe somebody has stopped in their career, and then you have to face each other and say, well, who are we? What's our definition? Who are we now? So marital strain or partner strain is something that I see a lot as well.
And probably, you know, a lot of people in their mid-age, their parents are getting older. And so either you have the worry of taking care of your older parents or parental loss.
Absolutely. That's something we see a lot, too. And it seems that for women, we tend to carry a lot of that. We're caring for our children. But also with aging parents, we tend to become the caregiver for them as well. So a lot of times we're taking care of business on both ends, and it can be exhausting. And I find that women also tend to put themselves a little bit lower on the totem pole in terms of self-care.
Yeah, that's a really important one, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I find that. I'll have patients come and talk for 15, 20 minutes about, you know, their partner, their kids, their parents, sometimes their job. But a lot of times we don't really talk about them, or not directly about them.
Yeah.
And it can be challenging. It can be hard. And
that's part of the loss too, feeling lost, is because we've spent so much time, I think I had, but I think a lot of women do, taking care of everybody else. And that's what we feel is the right thing to do. Oh, these are my children. I have to put them first. This is, you know, hopefully my marriage. I want to make sure I nurture that. And my job, I want to make sure I do that. And then it's like, how are you going to take care of yourself?
Exactly.
And physically, a lot of things happen in mid-age.
Oh, yeah. There's that as well. Yes. Yeah. As 40s and 50s, there's a lot of physical hormonal changes that are going on, and that definitely takes a toll on how we feel about ourselves, how we feel as women, especially as menopause, perimenopause starts to get a little bit closer. Our feeling of our reproductive self, our vitality. There's a loss.
Yeah.
That you know, even if we're done having children, even if we say, you know, we're done having children, this is not something that we want any more of, but just the process of saying, well, I can't have a child anymore is very hard emotionally for a lot of women. So there's that mental aspect of going through menopause. And hormonally, there's a lot of changes too, that sleep is affected. Sleep is not as good. There's a lot of mood swings. So it's a very challenging time. And, you know, getting back to the sleep, when we don't sleep well, we're tired throughout the day, it's harder for us to manage stress, and it's a cycle. As the stress builds, we don't sleep as well, and suddenly we find ourselves really at wit's end. And that's a lot of times when mood disorders, anxiety, depression, they start to creep in at that point.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I thought a lot about when I was having my own issues is, I wonder if any of this is tied to perimenopause. Are my hormones changing so that kind of my coping mechanisms are different or my moods are different? Who knows? But something to look forward to, menopause.
It is. It's something very much to look forward to. But yes.
And that's going to be something that... it's going to be another transition for a lot of us entering 50s and beyond.
Yes.
And I'm sure there's upsides to that too, in terms of, for me, the hormones of has resulted in having migraines every month. And yes. You helped me with that too.
Yeah.
You had recommended vitamins, magnesium.
Oh, my cocktail.
Yeah.
There's medications. Well, actually, I wouldn't call them medications. I call them supplements.
Right.
So riboflavin, magnesium, a lot of times vitamin D.
Yeah.
Can be very helpful. CoQ10. So those are some of the medications, or actually the supplements that.
Yeah. Because not all of us can take Advil all the time.
No. And I think also, a lot of times patients or individuals may think that doctors were just there touting medicines that were in the hands of the pharmaceutical companies, and you go see your doctor and all they want to do is give you a pill. And I've never wanted to practice medicine that way. That's not what I like. I try to listen to the patient and understand what their values are. Obviously, if medications are warranted in that situation, then that's a recommendation that I'll make. But I think it's also important to look at the patient as a whole and figure out, are there other things that we could change? Exercise, sleep, meditation, adding extra activities to our life that could make our life better, rather than just using a pill to solve everything.
Right, and make us healthier. I mean, there's so many tools we can use. I think what I see sometimes is this fight between, well, no, only this tool will be good, or only this tool. And if we open our minds to, there's a toolbox.
There is. And I think that's what you're talking about maybe is the art of medicine.
Right.
And a lot of times that's not something you always learn in medical school. I think you learn a lot about the science of medicine, but the art of medicine is something that you understand with experience and time and getting to know your patients. So that's where I hope that I'm headed towards. And I feel like I still have a lot to learn, but I've also learned a lot from my patients up to this point.
I was very impressed with the way that you took a holistic look at my issues, not just this one, but physical issues. When I came into you for other things, whenever you sent me to a specialist, you wanted to see the results, and then you wanted to look at the big picture. And we went through all of that together. And I thought to myself, this is the old school way of your GP.
Yes, well, that's what a primary care doctor is supposed to do. That's right. Our job. However, it's getting harder and harder to do it in this day and age with managed care and big companies buying up little practices and telling us how to practice medicine, how many patients we need to see. It really starts to take some of the personal feeling away. And this might be a topic for another show, but just, you know, the burnout in the medical field, how that affects doctors and how that affects patients. It's a crisis, I think, going on right now. And as a mother and as someone who has a career that I absolutely love, it was important for me to also recognize that self-care is needed. And I needed to practice medicine the way that right. made me feel in charge, and that I could actually give my patients back what they deserve. Yeah,
I think that's a big issue, because I see with as we're getting older, me and when I talk to my friends, we start to have real medical issues that will be some of them lifelong, and we tend to start going to specialists, and that's all we see. We don't really see our primary care physicians that much anymore. If we have a flu or something, we go to the Minute Clinic.
It's true.
And or if we have an emergency, we'll go to urgent care. And as long as we have all of our specialists, that's who we're going to. And I do think that you lose that person that is looking at everything and saying, oh, this thing that's completely what you think might be unrelated to that, it actually connects somehow.
Yep. I feel that primary care doctors, we're like putting the pieces of a big puzzle together. We have to make sure that all the pieces fit together and make sense. Because a lot of times when you go see a specialist, they have the one aspect of your body. They're the expert on your heart, or they're the expert on your kidneys. But they may not understand the 20 other things that you're also dealing with.
Absolutely.
So having a project manager, I guess, is a lot of times what I call a primary care doctor, a project manager, to be able to put all that together. But I think also advocating for our patients is very, very important. And making sure that when we do send you to a specialist, that specialist understands why you're going there.
Yeah, so, and feels responsible to get back to you. You know, circling back to and kind of tying this all together with what we started on is the mental health aspect. Well, that is connected to so much of our bodies.
Absolutely.
And the way we live. And so when you have a doctor that knows all your other physical issues and can look at the whole picture, and then really, I think, be able to give you a better answer or better advice on how to deal with some of the mental health issues, it helps that the doctor is kind of looking at you holistically.
Absolutely. And knowing what your value system is also. And as we age, and if more and more medical conditions develop, that can also be a stressor.
Yeah.
And understanding how that plays in and how to support that best is something that primary care doctors should have a role in.
Definitely. Well, I'm so thankful that my journey led me to you, and that you agreed to come in today. I'm really grateful for your time, and I really appreciate you coming.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi. Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you liked it, please subscribe to my podcast. And if you have time, rate it and leave a review. And if you have a topic that you'd like me to cover in the future, or if you want more information about the podcast, you can always visit my website at www.thesecondhalfpodcast.com. Join me next week on The Second Half.